She was evidently uncertain whether, as hostess, she should put down her own spoon in sympathy, though none of the rest of her family had any such scruples. Grandma had nearly finished hers. "Alcohol has been poured on this melon," Aunt Penelope told her. "None of us will touch it." "Oh, I am sorry," cried Mrs. Bagthorpe. "Oh, how terrible! I simply don't... Would you like me to fetch you some clean ones? I mean, fresh?" "Pray don't trouble, Laura," Aunt Penelope told her. "We shall wait for the next course." Both her children looked downcast, having only got as far as the suspect cherries. When Mrs. Fosdyke came to remove the dishes, she was much put out. "Ooh, whatever's the matter?" she wanted to know. "Ooh, not gone off, have they?" "Alcohol, Mrs. Fosdyke," Aunt Penelope told her. "Do not let it trouble you. I expect that you had your instructions." "Pray remove the dishes, Mrs. Fosdyke," said Mr. Bagthorpe, cheerfully dispensing wine for his own family, including William. "Delicious, I thought myself." Mrs. Fosdyke looked a little comforted by this, as if she knew that it was not so much a compliment to herself as a glancing blow aimed at Aunt Penelope. She rattled all the dishes onto a tray, and departed in a moderate dudgeon. It was when Mrs. Bagthorpe removed the lid of the casserole that the meal really started to collapse. As the savory steam rose up, amid much appreciative sniffing and twitching of noses round the table, Aunt Penelope exclaimed, "Meat!" She sounded thoroughly aghast. "Beef bourguignon," nodded Mrs. Bagthorpe happily. "Mrs. Fosdyke's specialty." Her brow clouded slightly as she remembered that the dish would have been flamed in brandy and simmered in red wine, but cleared as she reflected that Aunt Penelope would be unlikely to know this. As it happened, alcohol was not to be the issue at stake. "Laura," said Aunt Penelope, "surely you are aware that we had all been converted." Mr. Bagthorpe looked up hopefully at this. If they had all been converted to Buddhism or transcendental meditation, there would be less evoking of the Old Testament. "Converted?" echoed Mrs. Bagthorpe, ladling a generous portion of the stew and passing it to Tess. "Pass this down to your aunt, dear." The plate was handed down and set before Aunt Penelope, who turned away her head as though she thought even the smell would corrupt her. "We have become vegetarians, Laura," she said. "Surely I told you. I have told everybody. And I can hardly believe that, having been converted ourselves, we should not have attempted to convert our own family. We have been spreading the word everywhere we go." "I can imagine," said Mr. Bagthorpe. "Pass that plate to your grandmother, William. It'll be getting cold. Carry on ladling, Laura. We can be eating while Penelope tells us about it." From then on, the meal went rapidly downhill. The younger Bagthorpes heartlessly went on eating while the storm raged about them. Mrs. Fosdyke was summoned, and on being asked to supply bowls of lettuce, grated carrot, and apple, began to show signs of handing in her notice. "Never mind, Mrs. F.," Mr. Bagthorpe told her. "Man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward." Job 5, verse 7, and "All is vanity and vexation of spirit." Ecclesiastes 1, verse 14. He had hardly dared hope to get his texts in so early on. Aunt Penelope was not really listening, because she was off on her own tack, talking about abhorring all manner of meat, and about flesh and blood, and so forth. Her offspring looked so bleak that Jack actually found himself feeling sorry for them. Grandma, who seemed already to have forgotten that it was at her own express wish that the D.B. had been summoned, was interrupting Aunt Penelope between mouthfuls of stew. She eventually turned upon her elder son. "You have some stew, Claude," she told him. "Where is your spirit? Has your blood turned to water?" Before he had a chance to reply, Mrs. Fosdyke reappeared and slammed down two bowls of salad and one of apples. "I hope these'll satisfy," she said. "I didn't use no mayonnaise because I didn't know if it would suit." "Cast not your pearls before swine, Mrs. F.," nodded Mr. Bagthorpe, hugely delighted by the way things were going. "Quite right. Are you allowed mayonnaise, Penelope?" Ignoring him, she stretched out, took an apple, and began to peel it. "Correct me if I am wrong," continued Mr. Bagthorpe. But didn't all the trouble start with an apple? In the ensuing silence, he reached out and poured himself some more wine.